Right now, 73% of veterans feel betrayed because of this. 67% feel humiliated. And there's been an 81% spike in calls to the VA hotline.
Welcome to the Spartan Up podcast, hosted by Joe DeSena, founder and CEO of Spartan Race, and brought to you by Wild Health.
We are talking about overcoming obstacles. The same way we teach people to get over obstacles on the course, we will teach you here on the Spartan Up podcast to get over obstacles in your mind.
Get fully personalized healthcare based on your DNA, biometrics, and blood work with Wild Health, the official healthcare provider of Spartan. Go to wildhealth.com and use the code SPARTAN10 to save 10%. This episode of Spartan Up is brought to you by Duralane, a single injection that may provide up to 6 months relief from osteoarthritis knee pain. Risks can include general knee pain and pain at the injection site. You can see full prescribing information at Duralane.com.
Joe DeSena here, CEO and founder of Spartan and the Spartan Up podcast. I've got a really good one for you today. A good buddy of mine, Scott Mann, veteran, amazing individual, wrote a book called Operation Pineapple Express. It's on the bestseller list. That's the New York Times bestseller. This guy is unbelievable. I was at a play that he wrote. I mean, what don't you do? You're unbelievable.
Yeah, talk about a midlife crisis.
and you're in Tampa right now. You're still involved loosely with the military. You're still doing stuff.
I am. I always will be. You know, I love the military community, particularly the special operations community. But the play that you saw that you were talking about, you know, my wife and I founded in addition to our rooftop leadership for profit, we have a nonprofit called The Hero's Journey, and our focus is storytelling, helping veterans and military family members and first responders connect to their story, because that's like the best transition tool you can have to bridge those civil military gaps. So yeah, very, very involved with the military, both active duty veterans, and of course with Operation Pineapple Express, we got reconnected to many of my buddies around the Afghanistan issue.
And the Afghanistan issue was the thing we were watching all over the world, basically us pulling out as a country. Is that the issue?
Yeah. Yeah, it was. It was the, you know, the final hours, the final days in the U.S. and NATO's presence in Afghanistan. It came to a, you know, really a catastrophic conclusion. I say that it was the culmination of, you know, multiple political administrations. Both sides of the aisle need to own it. But the very ending was really painful. It was a Taliban takeover of that country. And, you know, so many of our brothers and sisters who we served with in the Afghan Special Operations Forces with their families scrambling for their lives, trying to survive and get out of there before the Taliban hunted them down. So it was a dark period this time last year, Joe.
I got a crazy story. I just remembered when that was going down, I did a trip. I was in the Middle East. Where the hell was I? I was in a hotel in Dubai, maybe, and or Abu Dhabi or Dubai. And on my floor in the hotel was the president that fled.
Wow.
Is that crazy that I guess he jumped the border? And
I talk about that in my book. That's one of the, you know, the book. If you've seen the remake of Dunkirk, it reads a lot like that. Like each chapter is like a page, and it just follows the collapse of the country through the context of my buddy Nizam, an Afghan commando, and me trying to get him out. And then it scales up to SEALs, Rangers, Special Forces forming this group called Pineapple, all trying to get our, you know, partners out using cell phones and relationships. But the president you're talking about, Ghani, I have a whole chapter in there because we ended up interviewing several people that were in the palace when he fled, and the way that went down, it was like a Lord of the Flies moment, with him getting on that helicopter and bodyguards were actually pushing each other off the helicopter, to get out of there. And, you know, even when the birds took off the roof of the palace, they still didn't know where they were going. They didn't know where they were going to land. I mean, that's the level. That was the president of the country. Imagine the chaos at the airport. And that's really the essence of the book, is it captures, you know, in the context of that chaos, two questions. What does a promise mean to you, and how far would you go to honor it? That's really all we do and look at through these amazing people that risked everything for freedom and the veterans that tried to help them.
There's a great line that I picked up 5-6 years ago. Here are my principles. If you don't like those, I have others. And we don't want to live a life that way, right? Where you just have principles that change on a moment's notice. And it sounds like that's exactly what was driving you crazy enough to get heavily involved and pull this off.
That's so well said. I mean, it's so well said. And I think certainly everybody in Spartan Nation gets that intuitively, right? Because that's what draws them to that kind of race, that kind of work, is that you look around at leadership and you just see that nobody else is coming. You know, there's this moment when you look at our institutional leaders who should be doing this are not. And not only are they not doing it, but it's evolved into this place where their careerism and whatever is blinding leaders to just do what our parents taught us to do when we were five. And, you know, one of those things is to honor a promise. And for special operators in particular, Joe, I was a Green Beret. You know, everything we do is by, with, and through indigenous populations, like the young man Nizam, who was passenger number one on the Pineapple Express. This guy got shot through the face on a patrol with U.S. Special Forces because he turned to warn the patrol that they were walking up on Taliban. And he knew he was screwed, but he still warned his buddies and was shot through the mouth. Like, that's the kind of people that we were asked to abandon. And you know, Rangers and SEALs and Green Berets, that doesn't sit very well with us. Like, there's a promise that I have your back the same way you have mine. And when you ask a warrior or a Gold Star family member or someone to do that, it is it's a moral injury, man. And none of us could take that. We'd rather try to do something than to sit back and just accept this directive that came from on high because we knew it was morally wrong.
It seems like, I mean, we're a pretty wealthy country. We spend a lot of money on intelligence. Did we think that through? Like, what are your thoughts? I don't know if you dive into it and you have an opinion or you want to take a side.
So, it's a great question. And a lot of people have asked me that. And so what I will tell you about the book, well, it's in this, I'm going to answer it in this context is, you know, I wanted this narrative to be storytelling first and foremost, not a military book, not an intelligence analysis. All that's going to come and it should. But I wanted just to be like through the lens of those that lived it and walked through that open sewage canal and was pulled through a 4-foot hole in the fence and whose wife went into labor at the gate with 10,000 people around, like that story. But in doing that, you know, I had to do exhaustive research. I interviewed dozens and dozens of people. And that included some senior level people as well, and very well placed. Some of the top general officers and admirals in the United States military, intelligence professionals. And here's what I'll tell you: every single one of them said they knew that the country was going to collapse. It was a matter of if, not when, or you know, when, not if. And they tried to say that, and it fell on deaf ears. So there should not have been like any surprise that the country was going to fall. And then some people have said, well, the Afghans didn't fight, but it's just not true. I mean, we built that army in our image where they needed special optics and platforms for their intelligence and for their surgical strike planes and their helicopters. That's how we built them. And then without warning, we pulled their contractor support in June and the whole thing just started to fall apart like dominoes. And there were other factors as well, but you know, there really should have been no surprise, Joe, that this happened a little faster than I think some people did. But to take 20 years of building a network, an intelligence network, I mean, you grew up in the city, like, you know, yesterday was, you know, 9/11 and is, you know, and man, to have given up and squandered 20 years of work to rebuild an intelligence network and a partnership network that addressed the shortfalls of 9/11. It makes no sense to me. It makes no sense to the veterans community. And I think that's why so many veterans rushed into the breach, you know, on this thing was because, you know, of the fact that we've been here before. We've been here before and, we're here again now at almost at a pre 9/11 disposition with Al Qaeda.
How would you have done it differently? If you were in charge, I'm just curious, because I have friends from all sides of the aisle, wealthy, smart. Some guys will say to me, like, it was just too long. You just can't keep spending money over there. Whether you believe that or not, like, what would you have done differently?
Is your body ready and primed to perform today? I'm Dr. Matt Dawson with Wild Health, Spartan's official healthcare partner. And we're going to talk about heart rate variability, or HRV. You've probably heard of this, but what is it exactly? Every heartbeat, there's a variability in time between beat to beat. And the higher that variability, the better. We're not talking about heart rate. We know a lower resting heart rate is better, but the variability beat to beat, HRV, is better when that is higher. That's going to tell you you're ready to perform. It's also going to tell you that you're at a lower risk, for example, of having a first heart attack. So how do we improve HRV? Well, sleep improves pretty much everything. Exercise as well, but consistent exercise improves HRV. Now, acute exercise, strenuous exercise, actually decreases HRV the next day because of that hormetic stress, but then your HRV hopefully will rebound to a higher level if you give it enough time to recover after that intense exercise. Alcohol can have a really negative effect on HRV. Frequently with more than one drink, you'll see HRV plummet. Heart rate variability can be seen as a measure of stress in general, and mindfulness and meditation really reduce stress and increase HRV. Breath work can have a big impact as well. Very simple breath work, like taking 4-second inhalation and an 8-second exhalation. There are devices that measure heart rate variability in real time, and you'll notice a really big increase in HRV in real time in less than a minute from that simple breath work. But if you really want to dial it in and get that measure of are you ready to perform, consider getting an HRV tracker and measure over time and see for you which of those things increases HRV the most.
Wild Health, the official healthcare provider of Spartan. We'll be right back to this interview, but first a message from today's sponsor, Durolane. You know that knee pain can really slow you down. Sometimes that knee pain is due to osteoarthritis, a disease that affects some 14 million Americans. Learn about osteoarthritis knee pain and how to alleviate it at oaknepainrelief.com. You'll find information there about non-surgical, non-opioid treatments for osteoarthritis knee pain that may help delay the need for knee surgery. One treatment you'll find there is Durolane, a single injection that may provide up to 6 months of relief from osteoarthritis knee pain. It's indicated for the treatment of mild to moderate osteoarthritis knee pain when conservative treatments have not worked. Risks can include general knee pain and pain at the injection site. Full prescribing information is at Durolane.com. Spartans say no to limits. You can learn more at oaknepainrelief.com. That's oaknepainrelief.com. All right, back to the interview.
Some guys will say to me, like, it was just too long. You just can't keep spending money over there. Whether you believe that or like, what would you have done differently?
Well, I would have looked at why were we there in the first place? And if we're going to create this level of change, what must we protect at all costs? Well, to me, we have to protect the homeland. You know, what put us over there in the first place? It was the largest terror strike in American history, launched from an unfettered, unrestricted safe haven where Al-Qaeda had the ability to plan, prepare, train, project, and then refit uninterrupted, right? The over-the-horizon stuff we tried to do against Bin Laden failed miserably, and the 9/11 Commission bore all this out. There was no substantial ground intelligence network, and there was no partner apparatus to go up against the Al-Qaeda. There was no commandos. There was no resistance. I mean, even Ahmad Shah Massoud, the leader of the Northern Alliance, was begging the United States pre-Bin Laden to work with him so that he could counter what Al-Qaeda was doing. He was warning us. We didn't listen. And then we suffered that strike, the 9/11 Commission, our country changed forever. And the decision to go into Afghanistan, it was not poorly executed by so many general officers and senior officers. But I will say, Joe, we did manage to keep Al-Qaeda at bay for 20 years. We decimated their structure. Bin Laden was killed. And if you look at the Afghan commandos, the special forces, they were doing the bulk of the fighting at the end of this thing. They lost tens of thousands of people in the Afghan military. I'm not saying our losses were insignificant, but they were clearly carrying the bulk of the load. We could have kept a residual counterterror force of maybe 1,500, 2,500 operators and some Green Berets that could have continued to work with the Afghan National Army commandos, and that country would have held. if we were going to leave lock, stock, and barrel, and then we should have been more deliberate about who needed to get out. We should never have given Bagram Air Force away, Air Force Base, and we should have slowed it down and done it the right way and honored the promise of the people that we said we would get out, including our American citizens. So either way, it was hastily done. It was completely done in a political vacuum, and it lacked all elements of candor and moral leadership at every turn.
Well, and why do you suspect it happened? Just, I mean, again, it wasn't poor intelligence, like you said. Like, why would it happen? Somebody sitting in a room, how would they possibly do that?
I've asked myself that question a lot. I truly believe, and again, for me, this is not a Democrat or Republican issue. In fact, I believe that the last two administrations, one thing they had in common was they both wanted out of Afghanistan at all costs. You know, the Trump administration's design of the Doha agreement was wrongheaded. It took the Afghan government out of the equation, and we negotiated directly with the Taliban. So, like, the Afghan government wasn't even invested in the handover. And then under the Biden administration, there was this desire to get out at all costs. And so at a political level, I think that was it. There was no calculus. There was no consideration of our partnerships, of the national security implications of abandoning wholesale a partner force like this. There was no consideration of the fact that the United States has been systemically abandoning its allies since the Montagnards in 1978, the Kurds in Syria, the Iraqi military and police in 2012, and now the Afghans. Like, you make a habit of doing that as a human to your friends, you're a pretty lonely guy, you know? And when things get bad in your life, you're not going to have anybody. Well, that's where we are. So the biggest problem I have, Joe, and I'm pretty vocal about this, and I'm just speaking, you know, my truth on it, is I'm really disappointed in our senior military leadership as well. I think I would have liked to have seen some senior officers throw their rank on the table and resign or retire as a result of this, because it is such a moral injury on our veteran population. Right now, 73% of veterans feel betrayed because of this. 67% feel humiliated. And there's been an 81% spike in calls to the VA hotline since August. And it's all from a moral injury of going against what we knew to be right. An injury on the soul. And I still don't see any leaders right now, senior leaders, admirals and generals and sergeants major, stepping into the fold in the public space like you and I are right now and talking about what we're going to do to just heal our veterans.
Yeah, I want my kids to go ROTC and get excited. I'm not from a military family about the military. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to ask you that. How do those military families, I would imagine there's a lot of families in the U.S. that are second, third generation. How do they feel about the military now? Not so good.
So I have a son in the military. I have another son that's going into federal law enforcement. And I will tell you, there's a lot of guys and girls in our veteran community who their children are now serving. You know, and even in my play, I wrote, you know, my character, Danny Patton, a career Green Beret, when he finds out his son has joined the Army, he says, how am I supposed to let my son fight a war that I couldn't finish? And that's how a lot of us feel. A lot of us feel like we bled for what happened in Afghanistan. We were willing to go over time and time again. There was no draft. There was no conscription. We fought willingly multiple times. We lost our friends, our youth, our marriages. We lost kids' time with our kids, and now our children, in many cases, are fighting. But Joe, if you look at recruiting and retention in the military right now, like, it's atrocious. There's also a recent poll about institutional trust that the military had the highest level of institutional trust in the country, 71% throughout the entire global war on terror. It's down to 56% right now of trust from people in the U.S., and it dropped 11 points after Afghanistan. So, you know, I think, you know, in both anecdotally and statistically, there is a real problem in how people perceive the leadership in our military right now. And I really hope that our senior military leaders wake up to this gap, because they're not seeing it right now. I had a senior general tell me, when I explained to him what had happened to all of these veterans who were, you know, just beside themselves for the loss of their partners and the ones that have been executed and left behind. And you know what he said? He goes, man, I thought they would be over this by now.
Wow. Wow. Now, I hate to make it trite when I say it could be as simple as, well, I guess what I mean to say is it could be really helpful to your point if senior military, senior leaders in general got up and said, we made a mistake. We'll never let this happen. We'll never let this happen again.
Own it. And most of the experts, Joe, it's a great point. You know, I made plenty of mistakes in Afghanistan. I talk about them in Pineapple. I talk about them in my other book, Game Changers. I made tons of mistakes. I mean, and, you know, the nature of war is so corrosive and caustic that we're going to make mistakes. However, what we're talking about here is the moral injury. We took these veterans and these active duty guys that were junior officers and NCOs, and the institutional leaders at political, diplomatic, and military levels, they pushed the responsibility for the safeguarding and well-being of refugees onto the shoulders of men and women who've been to combat multiple times and who are just trying to keep it together. And they shifted that load onto them, and it's still on them a year later. They've lost their jobs. They've trying to solve an Uncle Sam-sized problem with their checking accounts, their retirement pensions. You know, we paid for safe houses, food drops, babies born over a year to keep commandos and special forces alive, paying for private airplanes. Like, it has decimated our veteran population. And to your point, at this point, a year into it, let's just own it, because most of the moral injury experts are saying that the only pathway to moral recovery is for leaders to step into the breach, take personal responsibility for what happened, and then start putting measures in place so that this history of systemic abandonment doesn't happen anymore. I want to know that my kid is not going to have to go through this, because it sucked. It was terrible. It brought everything back. It caused me to look differently at the special forces that I love. I don't want my boy to go through that. You know, I don't want him to have to experience that. And that is where we need our leaders right now to step in. We need congressional hearings. Like, this needs to be set right. And to your point, until we own it as leaders, and that's true in anything in life, like if we don't take personal responsibility for mistakes that are made and own it in front of our people, how in the world are they ever going to feel psychologically safe to do what we ask them to do when we're not looking?
Now, I wonder, I mean, again, you were very high up in the military and in government, and I'm just sitting here thinking, really, the country and the military are a brand. It's like running a business and having a brand. And you can't damage the brand. Forget about all the moral issues and right. safety issues and just doing the wrong thing. Like, you hurt the brand.
Well, you do. And think about it this way. For the people that you were talking about in your tribe that have said, hey, we spent too much money over there. You know, let's think about it. Let me reframe it. Think about Russia, China, Iran, North Korea. What's the likelihood that we're going to take on any of those organizations or countries unilaterally on our own? We're not going to do it. We're not going to go fight Russia and Ukraine. We're not going to do it. We're going to work by, with, and through partners. It's what we did in the Cold War. It's what we've done in the War on Terror. I mean, even Al-Qaeda and ISIS, we've worked with the Kurds in Syria. We've worked with the Iraqis in, you know, Al-Qaeda in Iraq. So the point that I'm trying to make is, our whole way of dealing with external threats to our country has always been with partners. And to your point about the brand, you know, if we go into the next conflict, and there will be one, and we walk in the office, that young Green Beret captain has to walk in the office to elicit the support of a partner. And he says, hey, I'm from the United States. How do you like me so far? And all that host nation partner has to do is just raise an eyebrow and say, Afghanistan. And it's done, you know? And so that piece that you're talking about, the brand, directly correlates to national security and our standing in the world. And again, no one's talking about it.
Yeah, I guess when nobody owns it, nobody owns it, right? It's just diffused all over the place. Well, I'm excited about the book. I want to read the book. The play you wrote was amazing. I'm not just saying it.
You know, there's some big news coming on the play pretty soon, too, that we'll be announcing. But, you know, we're going to actually use the play to help tell the story of Afghanistan and help people heal and connect around it. But right now, I think more than anything, you know, we just need people to check in on our veterans and also learn as much as you can about this. Turning the page on this, man, this follows us home. I'm telling you. I did a post on this about 9/11. Like, if we allow Al-Qaeda and ISIS now, two terror groups in Afghanistan, to just do what they want, I promise you we're gonna feel it at home. Like, if that, those are their aspirational goals. That's what they're going to do. And they've proven before on 9/11/2001 that they will. So I hope that people will pay attention to it. Give Operation Pineapple Express a look. And if you have any questions at all on what we do, just go to scottmann.com.
Awesome. And listen, Scott, in your circles and your daily interactions, if there's any veterans out there that need anything, sometimes they find some excitement and their tribe at Spartan Races or Tough Mudders, it's on us. You could always just connect them with me. And
you know, I love that, Joe. I was just thinking when we were talking, I would love to put a commando and U.S. special ops team together to reunite and run a race. I just think that would be astounding.
It's funny. Earlier today, randomly, I had a call with SOTF, S-O-T-F, and they want to do one in Florida in December. So thing. So I'll connect you with them if that's okay.
Yeah, that'd be great. And I think if we could get some Afghan special operators running that with their brothers and sisters from the U.S. and maybe even some civilian folks as well, it could be a great way to heal.
Yeah, we'll call it Operation Pine. If you want, we could rename the event. I'm not kidding. And bring all those folks from around.
Heck, we're happy.
Right? Wouldn't that be cool?
There could be some very special reunions there, because a lot of these guys that and gals that got their Afghan partners over here, they've not seen them and since they've resettled. And so that could be a really beautiful thing. I love it.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks as always. I love when you and I connect. And how do people find you?
You know, the best way to find our body of work right now is scottmann.com. I've got the play there. I've got all the stuff with Pineapple. You can access the book, my podcast, but you know, everything is interrelated and it's all around human connection and leadership.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for giving us a voice.
This episode of Spartan Up is brought to you by Duralane, a single injection that may provide up to 6 months relief from osteoarthritis knee pain. Risks can include general knee pain and pain at the injection site. You can see full prescribing information at Duralane.com. Maximize energy, optimize nutrition, and improve performance with Wild Health. Personalized precision healthcare built for Spartans. You'll get a personalized health plan based on your DNA and biometrics and the support of a team of health experts. Sign up at wildhealth.com with the code SPARTAN10 to save 10%.